Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes. I'm Naveen Razik. Alongside me, it's Joshua Carroll-Walden. We are only a couple of days away from the start of the Formula One season. Josh, are you excited?
I'm more intrigued to say excited because, like, unfortunately, there has been, you know, a few questions and concerns raised over the preseason, but it is the start of a brand new era. And all their cargo from the six jumbo jets and all the sea freight has already arrived in Melbourne. They arrived yesterday. So it's the start of a new era in Formula One and the start of a new F1 season. So there's a lot of unknowns. So I'm definitely intrigued.
Okay, well, we'll certainly be looking forward to it. All kicks off in a couple of days in Melbourne. We'll be going through every team and every driver, bottom to top, in the next half an hour or so. We'll start off then with a team. We'll actually start off with the team that didn't make it to the grid in the end. Manor Racing team, who unfortunately went into financial troubles at the beginning of the year. They were looking good to keep going. The signs were so good at the end of last year, but the Brazilian Grand Prix, Sauber, who we'll talk about later, just beat them out with a two-point finish, pumping them to the bottom of the constructors' table where they don't receive any money at all, and that was enough to tip them over the edge. They failed to find a buyer, and they've lapsed into administration. Most of the items in the factory are now up for auction, including some of their models of their 2017 cars and the like. But all in all, it's a disappointing way to win, and not the greatest start to this new era of Formula One that we've got on the Liberty Media. But I guess the thing is, we now know Liberty Media have a reminder of what they are here to prevent, which is to stop any more teams falling out in that way.
Exactly, and like we have talked about Manor previously in the podcast this year, and all season, like, well, for the first half especially, we're gonna, you know, continuously ask ourselves what might have been, because, like, you know, from everything we've seen from testing, you know, Manor could very well be in a very juicy spot right now, you know, like, it wouldn't be too far of a shout to say that they definitely get prize money from this season if they were competing with the type of model of the car they have and with the Mercedes engine in the back. So, yeah, just a year of what might have been for Manor, and, you know, it could have led to bigger and better things in the future. And, there's a lot of, you know, there's a bit of finger pointing going on in the post-mortem, and, it just didn't end the way it was meant to. However, we should be pretty thankful that that part of the Manor DNA is still alive and well in LMP2 for the World Endurance Championship. So there is some silver lining like that. They're not totally dead like Caterham or HRT. However, they are severely limited and basically have to regenerate quite a few limbs in the World Endurance Championship, which thankfully is unaffected by Manor F1's collapse.
Yeah, and that's what I'm kind of hoping will happen, is that we do see a couple of the, because there's a lot of skilled staff at Manor. Yeah, they were at the back of the grid, but they were still creating a car that was lapping very quickly in comparison to pretty much any other series. They weren't exactly 10, 15 seconds off the pace like in ye old days. So I'm hoping that a lot of the staff end up somewhere else, nice, possibly even at that Manor LMP2 team. I'm hoping they'll be welcomed with open arms. So moving up the grid, we now head to Sauber Ferrari, the team which is, to be honest, not really much a traditional Sauber team anymore. I mean, Peter Sauber no longer owns the team. I think his name has been left on there in memory of him, but you never know when that will change. It's effectively, it's still the same team set in Switzerland, still under Mischa Kaltenborn, but it is now owned by a new company, hopefully a new investment into the team. They've also got a solid, if not spectacular, driver lineup with Pascal Wehrlein, who probably wasn't expecting his single-seater career to end up at Sauber so soon, particularly when there was a Mercedes seat tantalizingly in reach, as well as Marcus Ericsson, who is the man pretty much bringing the money to the team as the effective pay driver and effectively the major sponsor as well. So they survived by the skin of their teeth, but they are going to be on a year-old engine. It's going to be a chance of making the most of where they can at the beginning of the season when they're not falling too far behind. And then I guess just surviving from there pretty much and hoping that they'll be able to scrap a couple of points to get them possibly ahead of some of the other teams.
Yeah, Sauber have been talked about very little throughout this whole preseason. Like, they've actually been pretty reliable. You know, they've been reliable but slow, which is the real big thing. And unfortunately, with that year-old Ferrari engine, you know, they're just going to get slower and slower. However, they will just be reliable and circulating at the back of the field for now. Wehrlein, you know, there's every chance they could pull off a miracle, you know, points, pay and finish. But, you know, he needs more things to go his way compared to at Austria last year in the manner, as obviously, you know, that car was very slippery and had a Mercedes engine. So that's why the points came to him there. And Ericsson, yeah, just another season, another, you know, another year of surviving the silly season. But yeah, he's just got to do something to save his career. And, you know, if he doesn't, you know, stack well against, do well against Wehrlein, then it, his F1 career, his days in F1 are certainly numbered for sure. So Sauber, I'm not really expecting anything spectacular from them for this year. However, there is good news that with the departure of Manor, there are just 10 teams in Formula 1 at the moment for this year. So that guarantees them prize money for the year up at the end of next year. With the unique way the money, prize money is distributed, no matter how badly they do. So there is some confidence, there is some reassurance to, there, you know, how they'll get money at the end of this year and at the end of next year. So that is good for, the future of Sauber or whoever they will become. However, it's going to be a pretty boring, bland year of 19th and 20th place finishes, I think, for Sauber.
Yeah, it's not looking good for them. They will have to capitalize on that reliability, I think. And that's mainly because there's a couple of teams further up in the pecking order. We don't know anything about their reliability. There's some might struggle to finish races at the beginning of the year. We'll talk about them a bit later. But yeah, it's going to be capitalizing on that early start of the year, which they did in 2015, but less so last year, where they pretty struggling to score points, which is not where we want to see them. So, moving up the pecking order, we head to Renault. This is a reborn team. They were effectively in hibernation for most of last year. They were running a car that had been mainly the focus on that car was to adapt it for a Renault engine. The design work on that was very underwhelming, pretty much unfinished, you'd have to say. So now they've had the opportunity in 2017 to throw themselves at a new car. They've got a new engine, which is apparently going to be reasonable, possibly even up there with Ferrari. So it's very much, they've got all the resources they need. Renault have been working very hard to bring that factory as well up to spec, because that's the biggest thing, is that without funding effectively over the last 5 years, ever since Renault divested themselves from that team, they've been struggling to effectively keep up to the pace. But now they should have everything they need. It's just whether they'll, the reliability of that Renault power unit, as well as how the drivers will go as well, which is really the question that Renault need to answer for this year.
Yeah, for sure. Very exciting year for Renault. In fact, as I can just feel that they were just so eager to make their own F1 car for the first time in quite a few years. As they were just not satisfied with the package they had last year. So, you know, a clean slate for Renault. They've got, Nico Hülkenberg on board, who, has a lot of faith in the team. Both Hülkenberg likes Renault and Renault likes Hülkenberg. So that's a fantastic, start, to their, multi-year, partnership, as both parties, you know, really value each other and would speak highly of each other as well. So that's, you know, just a perfect match, for Renault. You know, I think, we could potentially see, Nico Hülkenberg's full potential, with Renault extracted. you know, just because, you know, at Force India, he had all the bad luck. And, you know, even though Force India is certainly a competitive team and, you know, really does punch above its weight. However, you know, they are just limited to funds at Renault. There is no problem. Nico Hülkenberg, for the first time, is a factory driver, which is all great news for Hülkenberg and Renault alike. And alongside him is Jolyon Palmer, who is one of the biggest surprises to stay in F1 this year. You'd have to say, with all the silly season talk going on about him getting kicked out, as you know, this year it's basically now or never. He has to match Hülkenberg. And if he doesn't, then he's out of here, because it's not going to be long before Renault plant one of their junior development drivers into F1, you know, just to really establish themselves as a full works manufacturer Ferrari F1 team. No, not Ferrari, French F1 team, sorry. So, yeah, it's now or never for Jolyon Palmer. There are no second chances. His money from his father, is not going to help him out in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, it's all about performance this year from him. If he doesn't come, he's out of here. So, it's exciting times for Renault and Hülkenberg. A very big pressure situation for Jolyon Palmer.
This is pretty much where Nico Hülkenberg is going to try and make this his team. He's got the potential. He won Le Mans, as people often will remember and joke about, but hasn't really done much since then. And since he came onto the scene in 2010 and was pretty good in a Williams, even managed to get pole position for the Brazilian Grand Prix that year, he's really struggled to get some clean air, and I guess that's probably because he's been in and out. He was in Sauber only a couple of years ago, and he was pretty much being pushed by Sergio Perez every step of the way at Force India. Perez ultimately was the most successful. So this is going to be a team which he's going to hope is built around him and his presence, which could possibly be destabilizing for Palmer, who, yeah, it is his last chance. He was very lucky to get kept on last year. We were thinking they might possibly have Esteban Ocon in this team, or Sergei Sirotkin might be promoted from GP2. But, yes, Jolyon Palmer is very much the last chance for him. Now, of course, Kevin Magnussen was at that team last year. He's now moved to Haas, which is the next team we will talk about. The American challenger, who had a, all things considered, fantastic start of last year, before slipping back a bit further and struggling, particularly with the Brembo brakes. And those have come up quite a bit, especially most recently in IndyCar. There were some issues with the brakes supplied by Brembo. But other than those reliability issues at the end, which you could argue is because it's the first time that Haas have run a Formula One team, they need still to get to grips with everything, particularly considering they were given a welcome shove from Ferrari. This is going to be the first year where their training wheels are off now. They are out there in the open. Ferrari's not going to help them much. The question is, how will they perform in their second year? Will the second year syndrome strike up again?
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to say from everything we've seen so far. Obviously, from testing, they did score a fifth place finish in terms of the fast laps. I think it was in the first test. I'm not sure, but I think it was in the first test that they were the fifth. They got the fifth fastest time in terms of the drivers. So, you know, there's signs of promise from Haas. Just it's a year of unknown for Haas. Like, they've got two very solid drivers in an incredible lineup of Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen, who are, you know, definitely pretty highly sought after drivers that can be the lead driver in any small team. It's difficult to say about Haas, really, because, like, there's just conflicting reports about how they're behind, but then they're exceeding expectations, you know, the day after they say that they're behind. So just mixed signals from Haas right now. I don't expect them to come up leaps and bounds from last year. Like, if anything, I expect a tiny improvement in terms of reliability and, you know, just being, you know, more of a solid, back of the midfield campaigner. Haas is just, you know, surrounded in mystery, for this year in F1. Just you're just not sure about what they're going to pull out, and you know it. And it's you know it, they're there. Like I mean, they're definitely not going to finish below Sauber, but you know that we just don't exactly know where Haas is at the moment. It's really hard to pinpoint.
It is. They do have a 2017 Ferrari engine though, which will certainly give them a leg up, particularly over Sauber. You'd be shocked to see them finishing behind. But it's interesting when you looked at their car, it looked very similar to last year's Ferrari, which does seem to suggest a sort of information flow might have still been going on later on in the season. They did say, though, that they stopped development on last year's car to try and get a head start on this year's car. And in many ways, they sort of did what the opposite of what McLaren Honda did, whereas instead of coming in a year too late, they came in possibly a year too early, and that sort of upset them. But at least they've been able to find their feet in probably a fairly safe scenario, whereas we're into the unknown here. We have no idea what's going to happen. So you never know what's going to happen. Hopefully, if they get the reliability sorted, they will be quite good, particularly compared to the fact that the reliability for some other teams on the other side of the grid is still up in the air. And also another solid driver lineup, Romain Grosjean. He's sort of bedded in here. Still searching for that Ferrari seat, like most half of the grid are. In fact, we'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the show, because there are a lot of seats up for grabs at the end of this season, which could be quite interesting in terms of the way people perform. And Kevin Magnussen, who's probably also maybe looking maybe in a bit more of the long term to bed down and get this seat sorted and sort of fit in well with Haas, because he's been all around the place the last few years, and I think the best thing he needs is stability, and a multi-year deal with Haas would certainly help that. So, we move further up the grid. Now, let's talk about the young ones. It's Toro Rosso. They had an interesting year last year. They were running year-old Ferrari engines because of as a bit of a setback from the old Renault Red Bull tiff that happened. They're now back on the current spec engine. They've got a solid lineup in that they've got Daniel Kvyat and Carlos Sainz. But it's going to be very interesting, the dynamic here, because this is a team where both drivers are effectively, it's their last year at the team, almost certainly. We can see possibly a full clean out. We could possibly see a full clean out next year, depending on the progress of Renault's young drivers. And both of these guys, their careers are on the line, especially for Danny Kvyat, who you'd have to say will be the first one to go.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of pressure on Daniel Kvyat this year. Like we've spoken about before on the podcast, how lucky Kvyat is to, you know, to secure that, to get that seat ahead of Pierre Gasly, the Formula 2 champion from last year, who is in Super Formula for this year. So, yeah, a lot of pressure on Kvyat. You know, he's almost certainly going to be the first to go. It's difficult to say about the future of Carlos Sainz, because the next best after Pierre Gasly is the Finnish driver who we've mentioned briefly before on the podcast, of Nico Kari, who's in GP3 this year. So, like, there's not as much pressure on Carlos Sainz this year, but, you know, it's just a question of how long he's got in that Toro Rosso seat, as, you know, obviously it'd be too much to ask for Nico Kari to jump from GP3 up into Formula 1 alongside Pierre Gasly for next year. I think that would be just way too much to ask, even for a Red Bull junior driver. So, yeah, just, it's difficult for Carlos Sainz. Like, there's no real... there's no one really looking to replace him at Toro Rosso, but it's just that, you know, he's under a lot of pressure because, you know, just the amount of time he's been at Toro Rosso is you know, one of those things that is unparalleled, because no one else has ever been at Toro Rosso that long. So, yeah, just a big pressure year for both the drivers. The car itself looks fantastic, livery, and the car itself, in terms of the aerodynamic package and the performance, looks pretty promising, actually, as Toro Rosso could be one of the big movers in 2017 up the grid. And reliability for the Toro Rosso is a big question. It's been flying under the radar from because of some other big teams that have had reliability issues, but there's just a question about the reliability of the Toro Rosso car itself. As you know, it looks decent, quick, but fragile. And that fragile word is basically going to be the thing that defines this season. And you know, if it contributes a lot to Toro Rosso's season as a whole, it could contribute greatly to the futures of Daniel Kvyat and Carlos Sainz's careers.
And that's interesting because Carlos Sainz, 3 years. We haven't seen anybody go for a fourth year at Toro Rosso, but there's a lot. There's those seats at Red Bull are pretty much locked down. Max Verstappen is in there for the long haul. The team is still good enough to be at the front of the grid, and he'll be happy there. He's got plenty of time. Daniel Ricciardo as well looks pretty bedded down. He's in there for a couple of years. I need to check the contracts for next year. I'm not sure if what's happening with Ricciardo's contract.
I think he's up for renewal at the end. Actually, no, he's signed on for 2018 as well. So that means the Red Bull Racing lineup will be unchanged for next year. While we're on the page, let's go through the other drivers that have been tied down. Esteban Ocon at Force India, Kevin Magnussen at Haas, Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes, and Nico Hülkenberg at Renault. And all the other seats, which is about 14 seats, are all still up for grabs. So, yeah, just a lot of pressure on Carlos Sainz. However, you know, he could be picked up by a pretty big team. Like, you know, if the Ferrari talks will inevitably come up once again. And, you know, I can certainly see Carlos Sainz going up to Ferrari. You know, just because, like, he was just dragging that Toro Rosso up into Q3 quite a few times last season. And just getting the points when it mattered. So, yeah, just Carlos Sainz, he could go very well in Formula 1 and, you know, just, you know, have a long career. Daniel Kvyat, on the other hand, you know, is just playing it season by season. And, yeah, there's just not a lot of options for him at the end of 2017.
Yeah, and that's a shame. And that's going to be interesting. Yeah, Carlos Sainz, how will he perform going up? And because there's so many seats up for grabs, including both Ferrari seats, one seat at Mercedes, two seats at McLaren Honda, and two seats at Williams as well. We don't know what's going on there. So, yeah, it's certainly going to be very exciting, very, very much a last chance scenario for Daniel Kvyat, less so for Carlos Sainz, but he will be looking at the clock and at the calendar, and he will know that sooner or later his time is going to run out. I mean, and because Pierre Gasly is knocking on the door, and we could almost certainly say that he's locked for next season. It's just going to happen, I think. They won't leave him for another year in Super Formula, which is in fact becoming GP 1.5 or something ridiculous like that. And we'll talk probably more about what's happening with Formula 2 and stuff later on in the year. Let's move up now to the big one, McLaren Honda. This is a team which, depending on who you read, it's either great or in turmoil. There were loads of talk, apparently, that... I mean, last week we talked about how McLaren said reports that the engine was terrible, was fake news, which is doubly ironic because one, McLaren, Fernando Alonso came out the day after and said, we're flat in all the corners because we have no power. And second, because CNN sponsors McLaren, which is a little politics joke in there as well. But yeah, this is going to be a very testing year for them. It seems like McLaren and Honda have gone backwards. I mean, their ERS is fine. That's what they were struggling with for the last few years. But now the engine itself is terrible. There were some amateur mistakes involving the oil tanks made. And you have got to ask, Josh, how long will Fernando Alonso's patience last? It looks like he might be near breaking point.
It's actually very difficult to read what Alonso's thinking right now because, you know, at one hand, like when the car was launched and during the first test, you know, that's the key word, nice phone, you know, he was just hating life and hating F1 and was looking almost certain that he was gonna leave at the end of this year. However, he came out at the end of the first preseason test and throughout the second test, saying that he likes the cars and that he's probably going to stay on into 2018. And yeah, it's just very difficult to figure out, as it's very surprising when I say this, but the only stable thing in the whole McLaren Honda operation is Stoffel Vandoorne. He's the only stable factor in the whole team. Like, the cars, there's uncertain future about the cars, Alonso, the Honda partnership, the leadership, the sponsorship, the catering, like, everything's up in the air and unknown, except for Stoffel Vandoorne. And you've really got a feel for Stoffel, one, because he clean sweeped GP2 a couple of years ago. He had to wait a whole year in Super Formula to get his chance. He's finally got it, and the car is absolutely terrible. So you've really got a feel for Stoffel Vandoorne, because he has the ability to win a world championship. There's little doubt in that. And he's got one of the worst, he's had one of the worst introductions into F1 possible. So you've really got a feel for Stoffel Vandoorne. But going back to the other side of the garage, Alonso, I just don't know. I think it's just too early to tell whether or not Alonso will continue into 2018. It's just too early. Like, he might enjoy the regulations, but hate the car. So unless he gets a seat somewhere else next year, and if anyone is actually willing to hire someone as old as Alonso is, it's a big question. And just the Honda partnership. There's been a lot of talk about the Honda partnership and the power unit in the past week or so. McLaren themselves have been making inquiries to Mercedes about possible reunification of McLaren Mercedes, which potentially could happen. There is a contract clause where McLaren and Honda can go their separate ways at the end of the season, instead of going all the way through to 2024, I think it is, which is sounding like, at the moment, a lot of years of pain and just grind and blood for no reward. And on the other hand, Honda is... they seem, in every single press conference, they seem 100% committed to McLaren, and that they're not having any thoughts whatsoever about expanding to a second team, or making their own team or whatever. Like, they're 100% committed to McLaren. So it's a very uncertain future at McLaren Honda right now. Like, they won't drop out of the sport. However, the makeup of their team and just everything from their lineup to the package of their car and their power unit is just up in the air, and I honestly have no idea what 2018 McLaren is going to look like.
That was Zach Brown on the phone, by the way. He said it's all fine, there's no issues with the engine at all. No, but seriously, talking about Fernando Alonso, first of all, there is that Mercedes seat looming, because Valtteri Bottas is only in a one-year contract. But whether he'll want to put up with Lewis Hamilton is another question at the moment, because Fernando Alonso is a driver who does need a team centered around him. And even now, there are still issues that need to be dealt with as well. There's always talk, of course, about the McLaren-Mercedes deal. I think the question is, that was a Ron Dennis deal, McLaren-Honda. Whether Zach Brown decides to cut his losses early and say, no, we're going to go to Mercedes, you can supply another team at the moment, because they've lost manner of the books. They only supply 3 cars. Their maximum was 4. So it's certainly not out of the question. So, yeah, but it's going to be a long year and a difficult year. I do feel sorry for Stoffel Vandoorne. Stoffel Vandoorne's stuck here, particularly because the promise was, by this point, they would be up there for championships. But now, it looks like they might even struggle to finish the races at the start of the season. I mean, they only just got into 6th position last year in the constructors. Could we see them dropping back further back, maybe even down the bottom? I mean, they do have the advantage of having a decent side business going, in the fact that they produce pretty good cars. But the F1 team is still struggling at the moment. So, yeah, not looking good for McLaren Honda at the moment. The team that beat them, though, is an interesting one. Force India. who finished fourth in the Constructors' Championship following... Actually, no, I've got it wrong. I forgot it again. It's Williams. That's an even bigger surprise. And they finished fourth in the Constructors' Championship. Williams, there is a lot up. It's an interesting mix, Williams, this year, because they've got incredible experience in Felipe Massa, but incredible inexperience in Lance Stroll, who is there effectively bringing the money. Because Williams, even though they're an independent team, the way the results have gone, they do sort of need all the money they can get at the moment. They do have a current generation Mercedes power unit, and they've been throwing the kitchen sink at the car. And they try to do that every single year to try and get this downforce that they lack. But we don't know whether they've got it. But if they don't have it this year, they're going to be really, really far behind.
Yeah, a crucial year for Williams. Thankfully, behind the scenes, they've done a lot of really good recruitment in terms of their engineering department. Bringing in the likes of is it James Allison?
Paddy Lowe,
Paddy Lowe. From Mercedes into Williams, which can only be good for Williams going forward, deep into this new era, so that's a good sign. The driver lineup is one of the most insecure, and uncertain lineups, this year. Lance Stroll, we still don't know how well he's, gonna do and how he's gonna do compared to Felipe Massa. Felipe Massa, he's under his own cloud where, you know, he was just completely finished by the end of last year, and now he's coming to, and now he's coming back in and seems to be enjoying himself. So, we don't know what the future for, Felipe Massa holds, either, like whether or not he'll stay on into 2018, or whether or not, you know, he'll just, retire for the second time. So, yeah, just an uncertain future right now, Williams. Like, there's good promise, however, and they've been really good in testing and looking like the fourth best team on the grid, but quite a while ahead of Force India. However, you know, it's just like they need drivers to deliver the goods. Without, you know, good drivers, you know, there's no point in having a good car. And towards the end of last year, Felipe Massa just wasn't putting in the good performances. Like, you know, he was napping quite a bit and making some lazy defensive maneuvers. You know, most notably at the USA Grand Prix last year. Stroll, you know, very difficult. One of the most difficult times for any young guy to come into F1. With no experience with the brand new cars and no prior F1 experience, so obviously he's going to struggle quite a bit just to get to grips with how much grip he has and how what his racing lines are going to be and how hard he can push the car. So yeah, just it'll be an interesting year for Williams. Like, the car's going to get better and better. Like, I mean, I can only see that. I can definitely see that happening. However, they need drivers to get the points, to get the prize money, to get more R&D onto their car. So Williams could potentially be let down by their driver lineup. But, you know, it's just... We need to wait and see until Australia, Melbourne this weekend to see... what kind of situation Williams are currently in.
It's interesting talking about Felipe Massa, the fact that the last time he was really up there in the sport was at the time when he had the high downforce, the hyper air era of 2007 and 2008. And he ultimately dropped off part of that, of course, and then he had the incident in 2009 in Hungary, and that really put him back. So whether he's been able to thrive in these high downforce cars is a good question. Of course, the thing is, it's 10 years since then. Will the body hold up to it? Although he has been fairly evergreen so far. Lance Stroll as well, you have to feel a bit sorry for him because he's come in at the wrong time, you have to say. I mean, 10 years ago, he could have come in early, but he would have at least had the advantage of loads of testing because they would have been running laps and laps and laps around Silverstone. But he's had to have an extremely public debut and get used to cars that he probably hasn't seen before. I mean, they are nothing like the cars he's been driving in the likes of Formula 3 and the like. So it's a baptism of fire for him. And I think he will struggle probably in the first few races, but he'll get better. And he's already got a bit of a moniker of Maldonado, but I think he might be even somebody like a Grosjean. Quick, but a bit all over the place. Even Max Verstappen was like this in the first year also. So I think it's going to be a process of him just getting to grips. And then I think he could really be really quick, but it depends, of course, on what Williams bring to the show. Now, they were narrowly failed to construct this championship and have got it right this time by Force India, who finished fourth in what was probably their best season in their 10-season history. It's going to be 10 years of the team this year. They've got a very solid lineup in Esteban Ocon, a driver who was meant to be up there with the likes of Lance Stroll and Max Verstappen, and Sergio Perez, the driver who just can't get a good team at the moment. He seems to be stuck in Force India for the last 3 or 4 years, and you have to say he deserves to be up somewhere higher, but it's just the way the cookie's crumbled. He will be, though, looking, this will probably be the season where he tries to push his case the hardest to get a top seat, particularly because that Ferrari seat and possibly even a Mercedes seat are up for the line, are up on the line and available.
Yeah, a very important year for Perez, just to really push those performances and try to get more podiums for Force India to really push his case. He's got a really solid co-driver in the form of Esteban Ocon, who had a fantastic preseason testing. You know, he really impressed me with just his general performance and his consistency. Like, he didn't put a foot wrong throughout any session throughout preseason testing. As he did a fantastic job. However, I did see, I think it was 2 days ago, that both Perez and Ocon were told to lose weight, just 2 days ago. So, you know, that just, you know, speaks, you know, just how much, F1 drivers are being pushed in this new era. And Force India themselves, we're just not sure about how good their car is. Like, it looks really good. Aerodynamically. However, you know, we just don't know, you know, where it really stacks up in terms of the pecking order. As you know, like that, they did say, well, they say they're disappointed in their car, and how it just has a few little niggles. Whether or not, you know, they're just saying that, you know, just a sandbag, or whether or not, you know, they're really struggling and, you know, could be absolutely nowhere near where they were last year, or whether or not they could really seriously be up there, or whether they're just failing on their very ambitious goal of getting third in constructors this year. You know, we just don't know yet. So Force India, again, we have to wait until Melbourne this weekend to see where they really are. And, another good solid year ahead of Force India, I imagine. You know, again, they're just limited by funds, and I believe that they've hit the ceiling in terms of the actual performances they can produce. I think 2016 is going to be as good as it can get for Force India, unfortunately. But, you know, again, you know, this is going to be a pretty solid year, especially with the Mercedes engine, in the back of the car. And, there's no real concern right now for the future of Force India. Like, there was a little bit of, silly season talk about the, future ownership, of Force India, and towards the back end of the off season that did sort of extend into pre-season testing. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. And, you know, if that, you know, changes and, you know, is given to someone who has a much higher budget allowance for Force India compared to Vijay Mallya, who's basically stranded in the UK, because of, you know, just the situation that he's in politically, then, you know, we could potentially see them really start to worry the likes of Williams and towards the back end of Ferrari and Red Bull. But at the moment, it's just a wait-and-see game as Force India are set for another solid year.
I think the thing that will be interesting is their performance. The gap is not going to decrease between them and Ferrari, Red Bull, Mercedes. What is going to be interesting is to see whether their challengers actually take it up to them, because McLaren, we don't know what's happening there. Williams as well, they typically struggled in high downforce scenarios. They could be fighting possibly even with somebody like Renault. So it's going to be interesting to see where they end up. I don't think they're going to be moving. It's just where people move around them, which is going to ultimately determine what happens to them in the Constructors' Championship. But they're very solid. And for a team which is was originally at the back of the grid in 2007 away, they moved up to the front of the grid. It's pretty good. It's a strong testament to the team, which is, of course, the old Jordan team, who know how to make a lot out of not much. Of course, the question is whether they'll keep it up this year, and it's still up for grabs. Now, let's move on to the front runners, the big three. And we'll start off with Ferrari, the team that is always overhyped. Everybody's on the hype train this year. They always talk that they're looking good, but it always something comes undone. Last year, they didn't even win a race, which was apparently meant to be the end for them. It's the worst thing that could possibly happen. The same thing happened in 2014. But yet, there is still this renewed optimism about 2017 that the car, which certainly looks unconventional and it looks like it had a lot of work put on it, the engine, which looked fairly reliable, I think it possibly has better as good as reliability as a Mercedes. The question, of course, though, is where will they be in terms of the benchmark with the other two top teams? And will Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen be able to bring the goods?
Yeah, it's been a very promising pre-season for Ferrari. You know, just how well they've done pre-season testing. However, they have done that in the past few years, and every single time we get to Australia after a very good preseason test for Ferrari, Mercedes just absolutely monster it and get 1-2s. So, yeah, you can see the sort of like hesitation about calling Ferrari, you know, championship favourites and serious championship contenders. It's been pretty interesting how they've handled themselves throughout the preseason. Just going about pretty quietly, you know, they've been, you know, more focusing about the car instead of the PR, and they're basically in a bit of a press conference grudge match between Mercedes about who is the favourites and who are the front runners, as Ferrari say it's Mercedes and Mercedes say it's Ferrari. So,
and that is a big change from 12 months ago when Sergio Mascione was like, oh, Ferrari will be up there, will be winning so many races this year. They've really eaten a bit of humble pie and taken the quiet approach, which I think is the best thing for the team.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems to be absolutely working wonders at the moment. And the driver lineup, you know, Sebastian Vettel, like, what can we say about him? He's an absolute star, you know, and just, you know, blends in so well to any package he's been given. Like, he was certainly frustrated about last year, and, you know, I think all the frustration and all the bad stuff that really affects his performance negatively that was really hampering him towards the end of last year is now all gone and wiped out from the high level of positivity pre-season testing. I think pre-season testing has been absolutely fantastic for him emotionally and spiritually, as I think, you know, he could be a brand new man when he gets to Albert Park within the next few days. And Kimi Raikkonen, Kimi Raikkonen, what can we say about him as well? You know, he seems to be in the best form that he's ever been, really. Like, you know, towards the end of last year, he was really matching Vettel. You know, he was really, you know, he was actually looking like he'd be able to win races for Ferrari if they gave him a good car. And, it's pretty remarkable when you consider, 6 to 8 months ago where, like, he was just in the background there, you know, just bringing up the fourth places and just supporting Vettel, whereas now he's an actual contender. And, you know, I wouldn't be that surprised if Kimi Raikkonen actually beats Vettel in the driver's standings this year. As, Naveen, you briefly mentioned about Felipe Massa, about the high downforce cars. Kimi Raikkonen is actually in the same boat. However, he's got a much higher self-esteem compared to Felipe Massa, who obviously was meant to retire. And also is in considerably better form. So yeah, just you know, it could be a very surprising and very exciting year for Kimi Raikkonen, and you know, but still, those rumours about whether or not he'll stay or go, you know, will still hang over. However, if he wins, like, you know, two of the first five races, two of the first five Grand Prix, and is really in the championship hunt, then I think we could potentially see all that silly season talk about the second Ferrari seat shot down. So, yeah, a very exciting year ahead for Ferrari. Like, I really hope that they really are basically on par with Mercedes, and, you know, it turns into a very memorable grudge match throughout the year with 20 races. So, yeah, there's a lot to be excited about Ferrari. However, all that excitement will either be confirmed or invalidated when Q3 rolls around at Melbourne.
And also with that, it's like it's the last year on the contract for Sebastian Vettel, the man who was trying to emulate his idol Michael Schumacher and bringing this team back from the doldrums. And he got close in 2015 and he dropped off. How he will be this year is still up for grabs. And of course, the way the dynamic goes with Kimi Raikkonen, they're good friends. But whether Sebastian Vettel has still got the motivation, I think he was slipping at parts of last year where he was frustrated. And I think that showed in his form. But I'm hoping and I'm guessing he's very motivated this year that they'll be able to bridge that gap. And that should be very exciting indeed. Second on the Constructors' Championship last year was Red Bull Racing Tank Hoyer, as they are officially known. They are actually running a current generation Renault power unit, but this is a side effect from the divorce, which has all been patched up now, and they're all best buds. Another very, very solid driver lineup, possibly even, with the possible exception of Ferrari, because Ferrari have still got a strong lineup, but possibly the best young driver lineup of the grid in Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen, two drivers who have been pushing each other to the limit for most of last season, and I think will continue to do so this year. And if they've got the goods, if the Adrian Newey is able to design a fantastic car and that Renault power unit does what it needs to, which is not particularly much because they didn't have the best power unit, arguably, when they were winning titles with Sebastian Vettel, but they had a fantastic car and a fantastic downforce setup. They could really be in the hunt here, and I'd possibly rank them up there with Ferrari, if not above Ferrari, in terms of performance, although reliability will arguably be the biggest challenge for them.
Yeah, it's a big question right now for Red Bull, whether or not they'll actually be championship contenders this year in what is meant to be one of the a regulation change that was meant to play straight into their favour and just give them a real good chance of, you know, knocking Mercedes off their perch. However, from pre-season testing, we absolutely have no idea about how good the RB13 is. Like, we just don't know. Like, I mean, it looks, keyword is looks, like that it's a bit of a step back from last year, in terms of the actual chassis and the aerodynamics, and everything else. Obviously the engines are being a bit better, but they've gone down the old Williams path of just, they seem to be going down the old Williams path of just, straight line speed and being very good at places like Monza. I honestly don't know where Red Bull are going to be. Like, I'm very tempted to say that they won't be championship contenders this year. They'll just finish they're in the constructors and just get podiums every now and then. However, you just never rule out Red Bull Racing in F1. You never rule them out as, obviously the car and all their parts have arrived in Melbourne, as I said at the start of the podcast. However, we haven't actually seen, the Red Bull 13, actually break cover in its full competition form at Albert Park yet. So, yeah, I just don't know what Red Bull are capable of this year. Like, they could be anywhere. Like, they could be anywhere from third up. So, yeah, it's just very, very hard to tell. But, you know, if they are certainly in the championship hunt, then it's going to be a very juicy battle to see, the first championship battle between Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen, as that'll be an absolute treat to watch, as obviously Daniel is much more consistent than Verstappen, as Ricciardo did finish every single race. I think it might have been every single race in the points, with the possible exception of the Russian Grand Prix with that terrible strategy last year. However, you know, there's Max Verstappen as well, who's in his third year in Formula One. You know, and like, this is where the maturity does start to come in, even though he's only about 19 to 20 years of age. Realistically, once again, it comes down to the car that Red Bull give both those drivers, and, I just have no clue about how good the Red Bull is going to be this year. You know, it's just one very big unknown. And, once again, we'll have to wait and see what happens in Q3.
And the thing, of course, is the fact that these are two drivers who've got fantastic racecraft skills, which you'd argue is lacking in some of the other higher-placed drivers in the grid. Of course, Rosberg used to struggle a little bit with wheel-to-wheel racing. Sebastian Vettel a little bit as well, but these are two drivers who are very, very good and very, very quick, and they will be up there. However, it will take a mountain. They'll have to climb a mountain to beat the top team of last year and the expected top team this year, Mercedes. They have got everything for them to keep on going. The only question is, how will Valtteri Bottas perform? Will he be up there with Lewis Hamilton? And if so, could their Constructors' Championship still be under threat?
That's the big question. Like, from pre-season testing, Valtteri Bottas is no longer no stranger to the Mercedes F1 W07, as he did over 600 laps throughout pre-season testing, which is pretty remarkable for any driver. So he's certainly very familiar now with the Mercedes F1 cars. However, you know, it's just more the wheel-to-wheel racing that we're unsure of, as, you know, the only thing he's ever known is Williams, and Williams cars have never been strong ever since he came into the sport at wheel-to-wheel racing. Like, he was certainly getting the performances, however, the wheel-to-wheel racing was always an unknown, and this year we really get to see what he's capable of. Like, we've spoken quite a bit about Bottas and what he will become, what he'll potentially become this year. And he is technically the weak chain in link. So if anything's going to go wrong, cost Mercedes the championship, it could potentially be Valtteri Bottas, as potentially we could be in a situation where the whole top three finishing order in the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull, could all lay on the shoulders of Valtteri Bottas. And that is enormous for someone who's only been at Williams for three seasons prior. So, yeah, I don't know how Valtteri is going to go. Like, he's certainly very polished. Like, you know, he's not got any of the bad characteristics that a young driver would have. Like, he's very polished now. Like, his technique, techniques through qualified and his racing lines are very, very polished. It's just a big unknown for Bottas. Like, I don't expect him to be on the same level as Hamilton, but, you know, I think it'd be a really good year if he gets a lot of second places to Hamilton, and, you know, maybe get the surprise Grand Prix win. As that's the other thing, he hasn't actually won a Grand Prix yet. If he doesn't win his first Grand Prix this year, then there's going to be a lot of doubts over his future. So
he doesn't want to turn into the next Heikki Kovalainen.
No, for sure. And that's a very big thing that he has to keep in mind of, especially when you consider that Keke actually won the Hungarian Grand Prix when he was at McLaren. So, yeah, just a big unknown for Bottas. Lewis Hamilton, you know, honestly, I expect him to be just an alien in terms of his form and his hunger to get back that world championship that was taken from him by Rosberg last year. And just going to the package itself, like, it's beautifully, beautifully, complex. You know, just the aero and the barge boards and the, double feature, T-wing, at the end of their, double feature shark fin. You know, it's beautifully complex and is basically, a mini rear wing, of all things. So, yeah, the Mercedes, in terms of its aerodynamics, is beautifully complex, and, you know, it's just, it's going to be fantastic in terms of downforce, no doubt about that. However, there's a little bit of a question over the power unit, as they did say coming into pre-season testing that they've improved every aspect of the Mercedes power unit, and that sent, you know, shivers down Ferrari and Red Bull spines in terms of how much better the Mercedes power unit is. However, during pre-season testing, it just didn't look that good. Like, if anything, it looked like a bit of a come down from last year. But you know, we do know that Mercedes does like to sandbag a lot throughout pre-season testing. Thankfully, this year, in terms of their strategy, it is more open, as, like, they've not just done medium tyre running throughout pre-season testing, so Mercedes are going to be more open to going onto the ultra soft tyres and the super soft tyres, and like they've got a good general knowledge of all the tyre compounds compared to last year. So yeah, Mercedes, like, we should expect them to be right up there, and you know, we should expect Mercedes to have one car on the front row of the grid at Albert Park this weekend. However, you know, there's just a few question marks about Bottas and the power unit and where they are in terms of Ferrari that just makes me go, maybe not. Maybe this is the year that, you know, someone else takes over in terms of dominating and getting all the championships and all the prize money in F1 this year. So it's going to be fantastic to see how Mercedes go this year. But, you know, once again, you know, there's just a few question marks over Mercedes this year that, you know, we just don't know about.
Yes, and that's going to be interesting. And of course, the man of the hour is always Lewis Hamilton. He is the defending, he's not the defending champion this year, of course, because Nico Rosberg retired after winning his championship. He is going to be at his hungriest, I have to say. Probably the hungriest he's been since 2014 when he first had a sniff of contending for a championship. He is not going to go down without a fight. I think we're going to see arguably Hamilton and possibly even his peak of his powers now that he's got to really run away with this one. I think mainly just to, satisfy his own personal standards as well. And also because the threat of Red Bull and Ferrari looks to be at its strongest this year as well when he's not coming back off a championship win.
Yeah, for sure. And right now, except for the power unit question marks, Lewis Hamilton's got everything going for him right now. And, yeah, that's something that every driver wants heading into a new season. Thankfully, for Hamilton, he's got that going for him this year. So, yeah, you know, there's big expectations on Lewis this year. We certainly don't expect him to fall below expectations in terms of finishing right up there at the end of the year at Abu Dhabi. He's definitely a contender, no matter, you know, and that's just something that he's been throughout his whole career. You know, he's never been outside of the championship hunt and just, you know, picking up points in the midfield. He's always been up there. We expect more of the same from him this year. So it'll be interesting to see how Lewis Hamilton's 2017 plays out.
That's pretty much rounded up our rundown of all the teams and all the drivers for this year. Having a look at the calendar, it's mostly unchanged since last year. There's a couple of nip and tucks. We, of course, start off at Australia, which kicks off this week. And then we go to China, then Bahrain. They swapped around on the calendar. Then to Russia, Spain, Monaco, Canada, Azerbaijan, not Europe. They've had to change that around this year. I don't think Liberty was too happy with their interesting interpretation of the the geography of Europe. After that, we have Austria, Britain, Hungary, Belgium, Italy, Singapore, Malaysia, Japan, United States, Mexico, Brazil, and Abu Dhabi. So pretty much the same as last year, with the exception of the disappearance of the German Grand Prix, which doesn't look to be coming back anytime soon. So a fairly solid calendar, 20 races, which I think is sort of the sweet spot in terms of Formula One, the calendar length. And it's certainly set to be, it's a fairly compact calendar as well, so it's certainly set to be very exciting indeed.
Yeah, one of the latest starts ever to an F1 season, and 20 races. I do agree with Naveen, that 20 races is the sweet spot for F1. Even though Liberty Media do speak about having 25 Super Bowls for their vision for the future of F1, but I do think 20 rounds is the sweet spot, and. There's a little bit of a question mark over the future of some F1 races. Like, it's pretty likely that we'll see the final few races at Singapore and Malaysia, with both those races set to go in terms of the future calendars. I think this will probably be the last year of the Singapore Grand Prix. And the last year of the Malaysia Grand Prix will be in 2018. And also there is the French Grand Prix at Circuit Paul Ricard coming in, next year for the revival of the French Grand Prix. And, hopefully, with both Grosjean and Ocon on the grid and, Renault on the grid, hopefully the French F1 fans do turn out to Paul Ricard for that weekend. And and as always, there's always the question mark over a second US Grand Prix race. So that effectively means that, it's probably going to stay at 20 Grand Prix if Liberty get their way, even though they want 25, even though they say the magical number is 25. So, that's something to keep an eye on and something we'll discuss throughout the year, especially towards the midway point to the back end of the year, where we ramble on about all the scheduling and what F1 and Liberty Media should do. But we'll just have to wait and see what the future of the F1 calendar holds.
So before we wrap up our chat about Formula One, I think we're going to go and do a couple of predictions. We'll start off first with Drivers' Champion. Josh, who do you have in mind?
Lewis Hamilton.
Hang on, I forgot to unmute you. Let's try again.
All right. Honestly, I just can't go by Lewis Hamilton. He's got so much going for him. And the Mercedes is once again set to be right up there. The other thing is as well, every driver on the grid this year has a question mark next to their name heading into Albert Park this weekend about, which could be something that really hurts them in terms of the championship. So even though he's got a few question marks going against him, I've just got to go for Lewis Hamilton this year.
Yeah, it's difficult for me to look past him as well. As much as I wouldn't mind somebody else from Red Bull or Ferrari going up there, it's going to be very, very, very difficult, I think, for them to get the consistency as well, and that's where Lewis Hamilton, I think, will bring it home. Constructors' Championship, though, I'm a little bit more hesitant, because we don't know where Valtteri Bottas will go first year in there as well, with Lewis Hamilton, a team which is now built around him, effectively, because before then, it was 50-50 between Hamilton and Rosberg, because Rosberg had the loyalty points, he'd been there since 2010. How that will fit in what is clearly a one-year deal, and there's no guarantees about the future of Bottas at Mercedes, will be very, very interesting. So I'm going to go on a wild card here and say that, like in 2008, where we had Hamilton win, but the other driver wasn't able to bring it together, I think we're going to see somebody else win. And I think that somebody else is going to be, just from sheer consistency, I think, Red Bull. I'm a little bit sceptical about Ferrari, and I think that they might not be up there, but I think Red Bull might be the ones to surprise everyone. And just through sheer consistency, getting those podiums might be able to steal away the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, very interesting. I, on the other hand, I've just got to go with Mercedes as the Constructors' Champion. Because, if Mercedes do, in fact, have any problems this weekend at the Australian Grand Prix, I've just got the feeling that, you know, they're just going to come out, you know, at Bahrain or even China, the next race, and just have the problem solved. Like, if there's a problem with the power unit not being good enough, they'll solve it by the time they get back to Europe. You know, that they've just got so much confidence right now, the designers and, you know, just the whole crew. It's got, they've got so much confidence in themselves, in their car, and in their own ability. And also as well, like, I mean, I saw the pit stop practice for Mercedes on YouTube yesterday, and like they just seem so well drilled, so well rehearsed, and, you know, just so well prepared. And, like, you know, there will be inevitably a crazy race where there's, like, you know, rain and, you know, boiling heat all in the one Grand Prix. It's inevitable that we're going to have one crazy race this year, and I just feel like Mercedes will be the best to adapt to the changing conditions. So for me, it's going to be Mercedes. However, I do feel like the constructors' title is going to be much closer this year, in terms of where Mercedes is and where Ferrari is in terms of points at the end of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix at the end of the year.
Yeah, so it's set to be very exciting. Now let's go to the other end of the grid. Josh, who do you think will be the first retirement of the year? I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be Fernando Alonso in the McLaren, which will be heartbreaking, but it's Formula One, that kind of stuff happens. And from all the signs we've seen so far, it's not going to look good for them. And this is, of course, during the race and the mechanic practice, but yeah, not looking great for Honda at the moment and McLaren at the moment. So I'm going to say they're going to be the first people to pull into the garage, or possibly going to be ended up surrounded on the track at Albert Park.
I've said the same thing. I've said Alonso as well for the first retirement, you know, just because, throughout the McLaren Honda partnership, Alonso has basically almost always had worse luck compared to Jenson Button. And I think that will continue into the new Van Dorn partnership that with McLaren, as was it 462 laps they did throughout all of testing, which is pretty appalling for McLaren. There were quite a few days throughout preseason testing where they just sat in the garage all day because, you know, that they just had so many reliability issues. And right now, their power unit is just all over the place. Like, there's no vision for the team anymore. There's no direction. There's no goals. And, you know, they're getting close to pointing fingers and just turning on each other. So, yeah, McLaren's all over the place. And, I think Alonso will retire at about the lap 16 to 20 mark. I think the McLaren Honda power unit will pull the plug at Albert Park. And I think it will be yet another year for McLaren where they run the engine at about 60% full power, just so they get to the end of the race and, you know, and try and, just so they can try and get some points to put into their bank account for some R&D improvement heading into next year. So I think, it's going to be a very long, tough year for McLaren.
And finally, on the predictions front, the wooden spoon, which team will end up at the back of the grid, this might be sort of similar, because I think it's going to be very unfortunately, it's going to be close between Sauber and McLaren. It'll depend on reliability and where they are in terms of points. I'm going to go Sauber, though. I think McLaren will get it together. And Sauber themselves expect to be last. I think they'll still score points, but it's going to be a long year for them. But it's just a waiting year for them until they get the money into the team for them to effectively move on to the current spec of power unit and pretty much resurrect that team as a force.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Sauber as well for the wooden spoon for the team. And for the driver, I'm going to have to go with Marcus Ericsson, just because he's not really in the same league as Pascal Wehrlein. Like, we've seen how good Wehrlein is last year with Manor, and this year, like, he's going to learn even more and he's going to be even more refined heading into this year and also heading into 2018 as well. Like, Wehrlein's only going to get better. And, Right now, you know, Sauber, like, you know, the pass mark for Sauber is to get is to be in contention in a race to get points. Like, I mean, if they're in the final stint of a Grand Prix and they're in contention to get points at any point of the season, that's a pass mark for me for Sauber. As, yeah, I just don't expect that much from Sauber. I think we're going to see a lot of 19th and 20th place finishes for Sauber. That is, if everyone is reliable, and that's a very big if, but I just feel like, you know, yes, they're going to be pretty reliable this year, but they're just not going to have the car pace. And there was not one point throughout any part of pre-season testing where they were faster than say a McLaren or a Haas or any other team on the F1 grid. So yeah, it's going to be a year partying at the back for Sauber, and Marcus Ericsson, there is going to be a plus side for him. He's going to enjoy looking at the back of 19 beautiful back end cars with those fantastic wide tires and low rear wing. So that's a rare plus for Marcus Ericsson heading into this year. But I think he's going to be at the back of the grid, and this could very well be his last year in Formula One, especially with the likes with Antonio Giovinazzi being, you know, so fantastic throughout preseason testing. You know, knocking on the door of Formula One, as there's no doubt that Antonio Giovinazzi will most likely be the favourite to win Formula Two this year. You know, narrowly missing out last year compared to Pierre Gasly, and if he wins Formula Two this year, which I almost expect him to, then Ferrari will most likely want him to go into Sauber, and for the Sauber to have a current spec Ferrari engine in the back of their car. So, yeah, a difficult year for Sauber, but, you know, the only way for Sauber is up, and that won't happen this year, but for 2018, there's every chance that they will start to turn the ship around.
Okay, so there's another World Championship starting up over the weekend, but it's on two wheels, not four. MotoGP kicks off at Qatar. It's set to be another exciting season. We arguably had one of the great seasons of MotoGP last year in terms of the sheer variety of drivers who are up there winning, I think, over the half of the grid, managed to secure a win, even if the championship was a little bit one-sided in the end. And we've got this very exciting and tantalizing prospect of having the three best drivers in three different teams. We have, of course, Valentino Rossi, the veteran, who is still in there, still up the front. At Yamaha, we have moving to Ducati. Jorge Lorenzo is staking pretty much his future in the sport at Ducati, and their reinvestment into MotoGP. And, of course, we have Marc Marquez, the reigning world champion, who took the victory with Honda, Repsol Honda, last year. And it's going to go down and probably going to be another great season in what's probably one of the great eras of MotoGP racing.
Yeah, for sure. And also another thing to note for the MotoGP grid for this year, there's actually no rookie riders. There's no first-year riders, which is pretty remarkable for MotoGP, and just shows that, you know, the grid for this year is going to be another step up compared to last year, as the only rookie last year was Jack Miller's teammate Tito Rabbit, and at Honda. And just looking through the field, realistically, Yamaha, they're going to be up there again. Honda, they're always strong, and Ducati with Jorge Lorenzo will certainly be up there. And just the size of Ducati's involvement with MotoGP this year, having, is that eight bikes? Eight bikes on the grid this year for Ducati. That's a pretty sizable campaign from the Italian manufacturer. And then we've got some of the outside teams. Aprilia, don't expect much from them. As always, KTM, they're struggling quite a bit and are off the pace quite a while. And Suzuki, you know, they're just there in the background. And just going through the whole field in terms of riders, you know, Jorge Lorenzo, there's no doubt that he'll be up there once again for Ducati, getting a Grand Prix victory somewhere along the line. Danny Pedrosa, you know, he's comfortable at home at Honda, you know, backing up Marc Marquez, who once again will be throwing his hat into the ring in terms of the MotoGP crown. Then we've got the big wild card in terms of Cal Crutchlow, once again with the single entry LCR Honda team from Monaco, an environment which, you know, he seems to really enjoy and really like. So, you know, he could bring a surprise once again this year. And also we've got Yamaha with Valentino Rossi, as Naveen just mentioned, and also the young, exciting prospect of Maverick Vinales, who had a fantastic preseason testing and could potentially, you know, surprise everyone with the MotoGP crown at the end of the year. So there's quite a few riders that are potential championship contenders. It's whether or not their bikes will be good enough to put them into contention. And it's an 18-race calendar once again, and, you know, it's basically unchanged as the British Grand Prix is once again at Silverstone as the anticipated circuit of Wales, which is the circuit the MotoGP will eventually go to, is just not ready yet, and is being pushed back another year. So a largely unchanged calendar, and a largely unchanged field with exciting new prospects, especially in the case of Maverick Vinales, one name to keep an eye on at Qatar this weekend. A big year also for Jack Miller. He's injury free, as well as his teammate Tito Rabbit. Both injury free and both just wanting to compete in 18 Grand Prix this year. Obviously both of them, you know, they had, you know, occasional weekends where, you know, they had problems, they had injuries. Now it's all gone, and it's an exciting year for both of them. And all in all, it's going to be a fantastic MotoGP season. You have to say, like, there's no real aspect of MotoGP this year that's going to drag it down in terms of the actual show that it's going to put on.
Yeah, certainly set to be exciting as well. And of course, Jack Miller, the thing is, if he puts in a good performance this year, there is always the fact that the spot at Honda will be up for grabs in a couple of years, because, of course, Danny Pedrosa is pretty much a veteran in the field at 32. You don't really get MotoGP drivers going past 34, 35, which just makes what's so interesting about and special about Valentino Rossi is the way he's been able to keep it going. Certainly a spectacular. They've made very little changes from last year to this year, with the exception of banning a couple of the winglets on the cars for safety reasons, which, well, if anything, will only help the racing. And that's one of the great things you see about MotoGP, the slipstreaming, the passing, the way the drivers always look like they're on the limit. And it's, in general, a great spectacle and a great product in the world of motor racing. We'll move on now and have a quick chat about supercars. They'll be back in action at Albert Park, a track which is an interesting one for supercars. You know, it's completely unlike most motor racing tracks in the world, but completely unlike the track that supercars race on. Very flat in terms of being like a street circuit, but very long corners. It's high load, and it's going to be interesting to see how the teams go. But it does look like it's going to be difficult to topple Triple H, who have typically been very dominant at the circuit, and in particular Shane Van Gisbergen as well.
Yeah, for sure. And Albert Park is one of those weekends where we could potentially see DJR Team Penske take a clean sweep this weekend. It's one of those races, and, you know, yes, it's not a championship, and yes, I won't pay much attention to it. I won't really give a hoot in terms of who takes away the most points at Albert Park and is crowned the event champion, or whatever they call it. Once again, there's new talk of a championship race at Albert Park, and obviously there are discussions with Liberty Media going on as we speak, basically, between Supercars and Liberty Media, which certainly will be more positive in terms of the potential of an Australian Grand Prix championship round for Supercars. And I think Liberty Media will know that Supercars is a very big draw card to the Australian Grand Prix, and, you know, and is something that really, you know, keeps the general Australian motorsport fan that's not really that interested in Formula One and doesn't really know that much about DRS and ERS and think that's a bit artificial, but that Supercars is on the is at the event, you know, that still brings them out to Albert Park and into the grandstand. So I think Liberty Media will be smart enough to recognise that Supercars is a big draw card for the weekend, and how it's a bit unfair that every other championship that's going on at Albert Park this weekend, you know, Australian GT, and I think there might be some other Porsche Carrera Cup action. You know, both of those are definitely championship events. There's no doubt about that. They're both, you know, pretty stable categories that can, you know, that can stand on their own pretty firmly without Supercars' involvement. So it begs the question, why isn't Supercars a championship event? And, I wouldn't be surprised if a championship event does happen before the end of the decade at Albert Park. However, you know, I think I am sort of being talked into, well, I've seen some articles over the past, like, 2 weeks, and I sort of do agree that it might be best for Supercars to just ditch the Australian Grand Prix throw in an event, another event of their own in there, especially with the prospect of international expansion for 2018, as, the calendar itself is actually pretty constricted logistically, as there's not a lot more space for future events to pop in there. Taylor Benbeam one for sure, and there's obviously the news breaking of a permanent Newcastle circuit outside of the city centre, which could potentially be a second Newcastle Supercars race, which, you know, could really, you know, either boom interest on the central coast of New South Wales, or it could just oversaturate it and just, you know, and devalue the Newcastle 500. So, they're just some points to keep in mind this weekend, as the racing, like, it's good, and the new tyre will certainly like the Grand Prix circuit more, with, you know, obviously more grip, be more in line with the Pirelli tyres that supply F1. But, you know, I don't expect any fireworks going off this weekend, as it's just they're there, and, you know, something, and maybe in the future there'll be something more. But, yeah, just don't take anything that much away from it this weekend, except any talk about a possible championship event in the future. That is something that you'll need to look out for and keep in mind heading into the second half of this year when the calendar does get released.
Yeah, I think the issue mainly is the thing about the Australian Grand Prix bill is that it's really constricted. They've got a lot of cars on there, but they've got a lot of events on there, but they don't have enough breathing space. I mean, Australian GTs last year, they spent most of their time behind the safety car and they only had a 30-minute slot. So I think it might be more of a thing of trying to increase the slot so that way we get more quality over quantity. But that's always a difficulty, especially because there were talks a couple of years ago of running races with pit stops in there as well, which would certainly spice things up. And they do have their own pit lane, so it's not out of the question. They could run it, but working with the constraint of the GP and everything is always a difficulty and stuff like that. One thing I wouldn't mind, though, is possibly the idea of a Supercars All-Star race, which could, as a non-championship race, work out fairly well, particularly if there's a decent price to incentivize people to compete or something like that, and if they use it as a way to spice up the format or something like that. But that's still, of course, still up for grabs. But I think, in general, Supercars need to look at maybe trying to get a little bit more space on the bill, and that's, of course, just going to be negotiations with the Australian Grand Prix Corp surrounding that.
Yeah, for sure. And, there are radical ideas being put forward for both the future of F1 and Supercars Grand Prix weekends, as, Yeah, that could, like, I mean, anything could happen under Liberty Media. Like, we could see, you know, basically only one 2 hour practice session and then straight into qualifying for F1. Like, we don't know. So anything's possible. I certainly don't see the Australian Grand Prix being extended to 5 days. I certainly don't see that happening. I think, you know, it's definitely going to be constricted to 4. And I did sort of see that, you know, Thursday morning, like nothing really happens on Thursday until about 2 o'clock-ish Melbourne time. So, you know, that they could slot in all their practice sessions on Thursday, Supercars. And then, you know, the proposal was for one Friday race and then... I think either one or two on Saturday, and then just you know, let F1, you know, have its show on Sunday and not have any runtime, and just give the teams an extra day to just get out of Melbourne, get back to base, and just get ready for the next event. So yeah, like, there's certainly a lot of possibilities for the future, and I hope for both parties that, you know, it works out to be the best. But, yeah, just Supercars, I think they need to keep in mind that that it might be best for them to have their own event elsewhere, either the week before or the week after the Grand Prix.
Okay, moving on. We're just going to be wrapping up soon, but we'll move on now to some Formula E news breaking overnight. That former Formula One driver Esteban Gutierrez has found a new home at Takita. He will join John Erik Verne there as well, and they forced out Mark Ingham, which is all around a good decision because it was very, very obvious that Mark Ingham was there as a paid driver, and I think it's only going to be an improvement from here. And they've now got two fairly experienced drivers in there, and it's going to ideally help Takita up the grid because John Erik Verne has been delivering the performances, but the other man certainly hasn't.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I mean, Mark certainly did, you know, show some promise at the first race of the Battersea E-Prix last year, where he just finished outside the points last year. So... there was some promise, but yeah, just the performances have dropped off and just don't like. It just wasn't working right that for Takita to have Mark Winha there. Like, I mean, yes, I certainly do understand the appeal of having a driver from the country where your team is based in race for you, as, you know, there have been many examples of this in the past. But Mark Ingham, you know, just, yeah, he's not the driver for Takita. Like, I mean, you know, I certainly don't mind if Takita try and source another potential future open wheel racer from China to go into Formula E, as like China, they do have their own Formula 4 championship that's been running for the past 2-3 years. However, you know, this underlines the big problem that that Chinese drivers have in open wheel races right now. Both seasons that have been run and completed in Chinese Formula 4, I was looking at this last night, both have been won by drivers from overseas. Like, the first one was won by a Colombian, and then the second one was won by an American. So yeah, there's just no real good exciting prospects for a Chinese open wheel racer in either IndyCar, Formula E, or Formula 1 right now. As, you know, it's just something that will take time. But, yeah, just overall, a good move. Gutierrez, you know, I think, you know, he'll like the non-pressure situation of Formula E much more than Formula 1. And, yeah, just, you know, I think, you know, now we'll really see how he stacks up compared to John Erik Verne, who has the ability to still be in F1, but, you know, just isn't there. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see, you know, what happens at the next Formula E race round 4 of the championship. Gutierrez, you know, I hope for his sake that he does pull the results and get some good points. Still an uncertain future for Gutierrez. Just, yeah, I'm unsure as to what his future entails.
It's interesting that team is now effectively a Ferrari B team. You've got two Ferrari development drivers in there as well. And of course, he would be debuting at his home Grand Prix, which should hopefully bring plenty of fans to the Mexican Grand Prix circuit, which should be quite a sight to see indeed. Now, over the weekend, NASCAR is, of course, in action as it always was. And it was certainly a big, big race because Ryan Newman finally broke his winning drought. I think 129 races.
127 races.
Yeah, 127 races since his win at the Brickyard 400 in Indy a couple of years ago. He's won in Phoenix after late caution, which put him back in the hunt another thrilling end to a NASCAR race. I mean, say what you want about the format. At least they're getting some decent endings in what is a big upset. And, of course, a great race, a great result for Richard Childress Racing.
Yeah. So, all round, you know, a fantastic race for both Richard Childress Racing and Ryan Newman, you know, breaking that long drought that's just, you know, been going on and on and on. And I'm really sure that Ryan Newman was really taking in every single second of that burnout on the front straightaway at the end of the race. So, yeah, just I'm ecstatic for those guys. And it was a pretty unforgiving race with both Joe Logano and Matt Kenseth having severe tyre issues throughout the race, which did result in Matt Kenseth going hard into the outside wall at the final corner. As it was a very very mixed up race in the end. Second came Kyle Larson, another second place finish for him, still searching for that first place win. Also a funny fact, Kyle Larson actually leads the championship points right now in the Monster Energy Cup Series, but is still waiting on his first win, which is certainly something interesting to see. Also as well, Daniel Suarez finally had a good race and finished his first race inside the top 10, which is certainly good to see. Then obviously Kyle Busch, up there once again. A bit disappointed he didn't get the win this weekend, but another solid result. And then Ricky Stenhouse rounds out the top four with Brad Keselowski in fifth place. So yeah, a good weekend at Phoenix, I must say. It sets up a very interesting race at Auto Club with at Fontana with just such a wide circuit and a lot of lane racing with a lot of guys either going up low and up high and coincidentally Fontana at California is a place that has seen quite a few tyre issues in the past, so we could see even more tyre issues continue on to this weekend. So yeah, that's something to keep an eye on, and we could potentially be in for another good finish for the Monster Energy Cup Series as they're sort of gaining momentum in terms of good racing, I still think that the three stage format is still sort of hampering the overall race weekend. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see what NASCAR is going to do next. Everything I've heard, they're pretty happy with the stage format and they don't want to change it. Thankfully, the new damage timeout clock rule that's come in this year, which sort of contradicts the three-stage rule, thankfully didn't have that big of an impact to the racing at Phoenix last weekend. So that's something very good to see as well.
Yeah, all in all, another good weekend in the world of NASCAR and American auto racing. Also, the Sebring 12 Hours was going over the weekend as well. Cadillac had a good result, as did Corvette Racing, very much upsetting the Ford GTs in there as well. So this weekend, it's all Formula 1 and MotoGP in action with a bit of supercars making a cameo as well, but it's certainly set to be another exciting weekend. Josh, who's your prediction for the race?
For the race, I'm going to go for Lewis Hamilton. However, for pole position, I'm going to go with Valtteri Bottas.
Ooh, interesting. it's hard to look past Lewis Hamilton. I think Daniel Ricciardo will be up there and get on the podium, but he's not going to get a win. The Aussie curse will strike again, unfortunately. Lewis Hamilton for me, although I think it's still going to be a very interesting race, and I think there'll be a couple of surprises in there as well. We will see you next week to wrap up all the latest from the weekend. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.